We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report for November 23, 2009. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, U.S. grain industry officials are voicing concerns about CME's plan to implement a variable storage rate for Chicago Board of Trade wheat futures. We'll have this and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason reports on USDA efforts to bring soybean producers the latest integrated pest management information. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Monday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. December wheat, 554, down 2 3/4. March, 570 1/4, down 2 1/2. May, 581 1/4, down 2 1/2. December wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade settled at 557 1/4, down 2 1/2. March, 578 1/2, down 2 1/4. May, 591, down 1 1/4. December corn, 387 1/4, down 3 3/4. March, 403 1/4, down 3 3/4. May, 413 1/4, down 3 3/4. July, 421 1/4, down 4 1/4. January crude oil at 78.45, currently 98 cents higher. January beans, 10.42, down 4 for the settlement. March, 10.47 3/4, down 2 1/2. May, 10.49 1/4, down 1 1/4. July, 10.52 1/2, down 1. December soybean meal, 315.60, down 150. December soybean oil, 39.40, down 31. December live cattle, 84.05, down 10. January feeders, 92.87 1/2, up 20. And December lean hogs, they settled at 58.30, up 70 on the day. And those are today's settlements in Kansas City and in Chicago.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at Ed Kieser's extended two-state highlights, he says widespread showers are expected Tuesday night. On Wednesday, scattered showers are likely across Illinois and Indiana. Coverage will be greatest to the north and east. Scattered showers of rain and snow will continue Wednesday night through Friday morning. The atmosphere just above the ground will be cold enough to produce mostly snow, but temperatures near the ground should generally remain warm enough for most of the snow to melt on impact. Dry weather will return on Friday and continue into Sunday. Another round of rain will probably arrive on Sunday night into Monday. Temperatures will turn cooler on Wednesday and then unseasonably cool on Thanksgiving and the day after before moderating during the weekend that follows.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
What we learned today is what goes up must come down.
Didn't finish quite the way I expected it, because the last few Mondays here we've been strong and finished strong. Then we saw the correction on turnaround Wayne Nelson Day Tuesday and gone lower then. But the market had a good gain earlier in anticipation of some strength, and some outside buying interest came in. But once that buying slowed down, I think the trade was anxious to come out of some long positions, print a little profit. We did see some hedge pressure above the market, too. Then the outside markets gave up some gains, too. Crude oil was up over $2 at one time, the Dow up over 180, and the gold up almost $30. And with those markets sort of easing back in anticipation of a little weaker trend going into Tuesday, saw the market sort of ease back in the final hour and a half of trade.
How concerned would you be about a lower close tomorrow?
Well, technically, we did establish a hook reversal to the downside. We made a little higher high and closed lower. The momentum indicators are a little bit overbought, so we're due to back and fill. I wouldn't be surprised to see some follow-through selling. But traditionally, as we go into Thanksgiving, that has treated the grain market generously here over the longer haul. So I would think we'd probably see some follow-through selling come into the market on Tuesday and see some recovery going into Wednesday's close.
When you were fielding calls today, what were producers asking?
A lot of questions. A lot of producers are in a lot of different situations. Earlier in the strength, there was quite a few calls about making some additional sales, rewarding the market as we go here. Then, surprisingly, on the pullback here, as we in the last hour or two of trade, we started fielding the questions about cash replacements for those who've sold here wanting to replace. I think they're anxious to use corrections in here to get a little ownership back on paper.
And would you think this is a good place to get that ownership, or would you like to see something maybe underneath that trend line through the highs, if we're talking about beans anyway, in the January contract, the June highs and the August highs?
Well, to keep it simple, for those who are fairly well sold up, been fairly aggressive on rewarding the market here, we use the weakness here to get some type of replacement on paper. We kind of feel that as long as these outside markets can hold firm and this investment money continues to come into the picture here, that we can maybe move sideways to higher here until we get into year end and see what producer cash movement we see and how the South America crop comes. So we're wanting to have some type of replacement on for those who are pretty well sold up. Otherwise, we'd be patient in through here. When you look at the big picture, I don't know if we can establish a huge move to the upside or a huge move to the downside here as we go into early winter.
Meanwhile, the dollar continues to vacillate between 74.94, I'm looking at the index, and 75.97, and it has been essentially in that range, with exception of a little breakout at the end of October and the beginning of November, pretty much since the second week of October. What are we looking for into December in the dollar?
Well, everybody and his brother's bearish the dollar. I don't know one person in the world that's bullish the dollar, so it's going to go down, is what I've been told. It's kind of comical to, listen to everybody's opinion. Everybody's got an opinion, and they're both probably going to be right. But until some type of economic change or Fed policy change, the dollar's probably going to struggle here. But we're not at all-time lows, for say. In 2008, the dollar index was trading down in the 71-70 area. So we haven't established new lows for the move in here, but we kind of feel we'll probably consolidate here until we see if there's a shift in Washington on their policy.
Does Black Friday at the end of this week play into your thinking about grains looking ahead into December or not?
Well, that's a good question, because Friday after Thanksgiving traditionally could be a yawner or a full excitement. The thing with this Friday is that come Monday morning, we'll have our grain deliveries come out. So for those who need to get squared away ahead of the delivery process on the 30th, next Monday, there could be some jockeying around ahead of that. We'll see how that develops as we get there. But as we move into December, we expected some strength into early December, and we'll probably see strength into year-end here, you know, until we get this crop out of the field and get it socked away.
And then do you think that at that point the market might set back and maybe set back quite a bit? In other words, should producers be thinking, well, maybe I need to be hedged sooner rather than later than in this marketing year?
Well, you look at hedge opportunities. We feel that, you know, we see this July corn futures. There's some carry there. You take your cash bid, you know, difference between cash bid and July futures, there's some carry there. Back towards that 450, 460 level July corn futures is probably a hedge opportunity for those who like to store grain in the bin and set on. We'd view that as an opportunity to be a seller there. There's a lot of corn, though, longer term here. It's probably going to come to town a little earlier than usual due to quality concerns. So as we move into after the first year, we feel that producers are going to be eager to get caught up on sales.
For those who like the use of options, are you finding bulk call spreads still popular?
That's been our number one replacement strategy for those who have moved cash grain wanting to replace it. It is simple, gives us the flexibility to capture some money to the upside if the market continues to move higher. Failure to move higher, and if we see a sideways or lower trend here during the winter, it gives us an opportunity to collect some premium that we sold on the higher strike price that we sold. I think that's the trade of 2010. That's an excellent way to manage some risk there, Dave.
Thank you, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. He is in Normal, Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Learned Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
In agricultural news, U.S. grain industry participants are expressing concerns to federal regulators about CME Group's complicated proposal to narrow a problematic gap between Chicago Board of Trade wheat futures and cash prices. The American Bakers Association, North American Millers Association, and Louis Dreyfus Commodities said in letters to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission that the proposed new storage rate system for CBOT wheat may only be a band-aid for the market's lack of convergence. The CFTC is accepting comments on the proposal from CME, parent company of CBOT, through this Friday. If the CFTC does not act on the proposal by then, it is automatically approved. CME wants to implement a variable storage rate for Chicago Board of Trade wheat that could change by about 3 cents from contract month to contract month. The exchange says it's confident the variable rate will eventually force the markets to come together because higher storage rates will encourage deliveries of wheat against futures. The Environmental Protection Agency continues to work against a December 1st deadline for making a decision about whether to increase the maximum ethanol blend rate for non-flex fuel vehicles from the current 10% level to as much as 15%. EPA, over the past few months, has indicated that it would like additional time for studies to be completed regarding the issue. Some sources are reporting that the EPA may consider allowing up to a 15% maximum blend beginning with 2001 model cars. but it is also possible EPA could make its decision contingent on final results from ongoing studies due to be released next spring into early summer, meaning the agency would miss next week's deadline. USDA rural development officials say that the agency is making $99 million available in grants and loans for fiscal year 2010 to install renewable energy and energy-efficient projects such as grain dryers on farms. USDA hopes to expand energy conservation with federal grants under its Rural Energy for America program. For farmers and commercial grain facilities to replace their clunker grain drying systems, it pays up to a maximum 25% of the cost for the entire project. Maximum grants are $250,000. To qualify for the competitive rural development grants, producers need to show how much can be saved in efficiency costs. Tyson Foods posted higher than expected quarterly results today on strength in its beef, pork, and prepared food businesses. The company, which is working to improve its chicken business, said all operating segments were profitable in the quarter. The world's largest meat producer reported a net loss of $455 million, or $1.22 a share, for the fourth quarter, ending on October 3rd, compared with a year earlier profit of $48 million, or 13 cents a share. Excluding a goodwill impairment charge for its beef business, Tyson earned 28 cents a share. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The United States Department of Agriculture is using the web to reach out to farmers and their crop production support system. The agency hopes to help them maximize crop returns through the delivery of timely, reliable, and useful IPM, or Integrated Pest Management Information and Tools. Todd Gleason has this report on the PIPE website that deals with soybeans and other legumes.
IPM, or Integrated Pest Management, is an ecological approach to production with a goal of reducing or eliminating pesticide use while at the same time managing pest populations, weeds, diseases, and insects, for example, at acceptable levels. The delivery platform is the web. In this case, we're dealing with legumes, specifically common beans. So the address of the website is legume.ipmpipe.org. It might be easier to just visit ipmpipe.org and then to click on legume. In either case, PIPE stands for Pest Information Platform for Extension and Education. Well, the very first thing to do when visiting any of the IPM PIPE websites is to shut off your pop-up Windows blocker. Now let's go explore. The legume site opens to a page familiar to those who've already used the soybean rust version of PIPE. There's an interactive map of the United States in the middle of the page and a national legume commentary just before it. The commentary summarizes field observations gathered by extension specialists, researchers, and IPM coordinators. The management toolbox in the lower right-hand corner of the web page is where all the heavy lifting happens. As the name would imply, all of the information in this section pertains to management of crops based on good farming practices, determined by the best available information and science at that moment in time. That is to say, the toolbox provides broad guidance and some specific recommendations for how to deal with a pest. The GFP tool, again in the management toolbox, is designed to pull together the expert management information and put it with the actual practices undertaken by the farmer. It's a document generated by the website that includes the expert management recommendations and a place for farmers to fill out what they did. The important part is that the generated document can be used for insurance purposes if needed. Information on all the pipe websites is fluid and changes with the growing season and the science. The site melds the two to provide farmers and their production agriculture support network with valuable, reliable, integrated pest management information and tactics. You may visit the Legume version of IPM Pipe at legume.ipmpipe.org. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with Cash Grain Analysis is Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, as we were saying off the air just moments ago, we call this the doldrums of November. Is that right?
Well, normally we're celebrating the doldrums of November from Florida or Hawaii or somewhere warm, but I think for the next 2 or 3 weeks we're going to be celebrating, if that's the word, here in central Illinois and Indiana.
Well, I think you guys are just being mean about it, because usually by this time you guys are off fishing somewhere and you're stuck here. So you're going to say, well, let's just lower the bases a little bit as long as I got to be here.
Well, when you see corn piles starting to go on the ground, as we did over the weekend, started putting corn on the ground, and you start seeing trains not showing up when you like to see them show up, that's usually when the basis widens out, and that's exactly what's happening right now. And it happens every year, and as soon as harvest is over, the basis will start snapping back. So this is all part of it. We just have to make plans to accommodate that and incorporate that into our marketing plans. But for the next 2 weeks, things may not be very pretty as far as basis is concerned.
It's the great circle of life, you're telling me.
There you go.
Well, then, can you give us an estimate based on what you see in your elevator, how much you suspect producers still have to combine out in the fields in the area you cover?
Well, I think when the numbers come out here at 3 o'clock today for the state of Illinois, we'll probably be only 60% harvested, and that'll be spread out in thirds. The northern third of Illinois, probably only 35 to 40% here in the central part, 60, and then down south, probably 85, 90%. But there's a lot of corn still left in central and northern part of Illinois.
Let's turn our attention to beans, which it should be well over 90% harvested, because it was about that last week. Is the pipeline in beans full? And if so, how quickly will it unfill, given all the beans we're sending to China these days?
Yeah, I think there's plenty of beans out there, and there's very little carry in the market. So the market is trying to incent farmers and elevators to move the beans sooner rather than later. The problem is you've got a fundamental picture that says there's plenty of beans, but you've got a technical or a speculative picture where the funds want to buy beans because if they think inflation's coming back and the dollar is going to continue to get weaker, they want to put money in commodities of any kind, whether it be gold, silver, oil, corn, beans, or wheat. And so, you know, there's a conflict there, and I think that's a perfect example of what happened today. We rallied this morning on the speculative buying, but then the fundamentals kind of took over, and we finished back unchanged to lower. So, you know, we've got that tug of war going on between the speculators and the fundamentals.
What about your prices today?
Cash corn finishes the day down 4 cents at 360. January 378. Next fall 404. The beans are 1027 now. 1027 in January. Next fall 986.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thank you, Dave.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons. He is in Champaign, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Governor Pat Quinn is defending the creation of new taxpayer-funded jobs amid the state's growing budget problems. Quinn signed an executive order over the weekend creating a state public health advocate. Less than 2 weeks ago, Quinn named a new czar to help increase business opportunities for minority and women-owned enterprises. The new diversity enhancement director will be paid $110,000. Quinn says the person eventually named as public health advocate won't cost the taxpayers much at all. Quinn says some of the people in these new jobs were already in state government and got new assignments. Graduate instructors and researchers at the University of Illinois Urbana campus have ratified a tentative contract that assures them of free tuition. The Graduate Employees Organization said in a news release today that the three-year deal will also increase the minimum pay by 10% for the 2,600 grad students the union represents. The deal next goes to U of I trustees for a vote that has yet to be scheduled. GEO spokesman Peter Campbell says that vote may not take place until the next U of I trustees meeting in January, but he says GEO members who have been eligible for wage increases will receive back pay retroactive to August 15th when the contract is signed. The U of I and union reached the agreement last week that ended a brief strike. The union says more than 1,000 of its members struck the deal November 16th and part of the next day before the deal was reached. More than 4 months after the shooting death of a Danville man, a sixth person has been arrested for the crime. Danville police say a U.S. Marshals task force arrested 27-year-old Reginald Seiler of Chicago in a suburb over the weekend. He's expected to make his first court appearance today in Vermilion County. And on July 6, 45-year-old Benny Moten was found lying in the street in front of his business in Danville after being shot multiple times. Five others, in addition to Seiler, are in custody and are being held without bond. Additional patrols are starting up around the U of I's engineering quad following reports of a battery that occurred in that part of campus last night. In a mass email, campus police chief Barbara O'Connor says the male victim was walking just past 7 last night when he was approached from behind and knocked to the ground, and two male suspects kicked him in the face and both sides of his body. The suspects are described as about 20 years old, wearing hooded sweatshirts, one black and one gray. Anyone with information is urged to call U of I police or Crime Stoppers. I'm Jeff Bossert.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is John Davis of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, John.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
It looks to me like Brazil and Argentina have a spot of central Illinois disease.
That is true. And some kind of extreme conditions kind of going on in different parts of both Argentina and up into Brazil. And I guess the big news over the weekend was very heavy rainfall in some sections of Brazil, especially what we call the center-south type area. Mm. And within that region here, we had some very heavy rainfall over the past weekend. So you know, some of the issues that we had last spring in parts of the Midwest, they're having some of those wetness issues as well across portions of southern Brazil.
And they're getting more in the next few days, are they?
Yeah, they are. And it looks like overall here we will continue to have a relatively active pattern coming up. And with that active pattern, you know, some of the wetness issues which have began to develop certainly will continue to be a issue from this point on.
About hot temperatures, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, nothing extreme, which they don't typically tend to get at this time of year. You know, it's still kind of, you know, late spring slash, you know, getting toward early summer. So you don't tend to get any kind of extreme heat usually at this time of year. Typically, if that happens, it's more midsummer. And so time frames like, you know, late December and January and Feb would be the time frame where you tend to get the really hot stuff here across those locales.
In Argentina, we've been keeping an eye especially on southwestern Buenos Aires, La Pampa, and some southern Cordoba locations. Are they in this rain pattern?
They are, and their situation has improved. And so the bottom line right now is that some of the dry pockets, which we're developing across some areas of Argentina, those dry pockets are shrinking. And so their situation has distinctly improved across that region, and it continues to look like they will be on the active side across that region as well. So for Argentina as a whole, their situation has improved as we've gone through the month.
And then in Brazil, Mato Grosso and northern Mato Grosso do Sul, how are they doing?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Whereas the southern areas of Brazil have gone very wet recently, the more northern areas of Brazil have actually gone on the drier side as we've gone through the last week or two. Not so much to be any kind of a huge problem at this stage of the game, but they're in the category now of being in need of getting an increase in moisture as we go through the next, you know, couple of weeks and go towards the, you know, early to middle portion of December. So not any kind of a major issue across those regions, but as we go through the upcoming few weeks, they will be in need of getting moisture on an increase across northern Brazil. So quite a bit of extreme weather right now across Brazil.
And just very quickly, 15 mm-hmm. seconds, U.S. Midwest precipitation on and off?
On and off, we're getting into a stormy pattern as we go into early December and a much colder pattern as we go into early December. So November's been quiet. Early December, winter begins.
Thank you very much, John.
You're welcome, Dave.
John Davis of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's closing market report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. This is Dave Dickey.